You're listening or watching Salon Soul Brothers and Sisters Hump of the Week archive interview with today's guest, Bridget Harron of Bridget Harron Hair and Beauty.
Good evening, Salon Soul Brothers and Sisters, and here we are down in the beautiful county of Clare. Tonight's guest is the beautiful queen of hairdressing in County Clare and Ennis, is Bridget Harron. Hi, Bridget.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
Okay, a little bit about Bridget, but I'm sure a lot of Irish hairdressers will know everything about you. Multi-award winning, has Trend Vision, fantastic hairdresser, gold medal at OMC. I think you've told me the L'Oreal has evaded you for the moment, but I think it's not that you haven't really wanted to win it yet, because I think you're one of these people, if you want to win something, you'll win it. And when your time is right, you're going to win it. And I just think you're an amazing talent, because I've watched your work for years and you're a really, really talented person. And you go about your business in a very nice, nice way. You're not over loud or not in people's faces. I just find your work sells itself and tells a story in itself. So I'm down here in beautiful Ennis. And it's a lovely evening in this virtual world that we're in. And I'm really looking forward to chatting and getting to know you more, Bridget, because I think we did once have a brief chat. It was the first time I chatted to you. And it was probably me and Sean Taff, and we were on an underground train in London coming from Salon. And I think it was me and Sean Donato talking, and you just sat there and listened. Is there a lady? And that's how it happens, you know, and two loud-mouthed guys come along, you know. So let's kick off with the first question. But before I start, I want you to just say hello to anybody out there in the world of Soul Brothers and Sisters.
Thanks, Greg, for having me on. And hello, Soul Brothers and Sisters. I'm delighted that Greg asked me to come on. And I hope that hopefully my story may interest people or help people. Or if there's anything that they want to know, feel free to contact me. I'm doing a lot of work with the apprenticeship and the RPL at the moment, and with Skillnet and the Hairdressing Council. So if there's anything anybody wants to reach out to me for, I'm always here.
Busy woman.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to find out through these 7 out of 7 questions. So let's kick off. Why did you choose hairdressing as a career?
I suppose I didn't really choose hairdressing. It more chose me. I wanted to do loads of things. Like, I wanted to be a photographer, a makeup artist, a clothes designer, like anything was really like working with my hands. And I suppose in school I did the Leaving Cert Applied. So what you do in that is you actually do work experience. So I was able to like go into different things like beauty therapy. I did mechanics for a while. I worked in an MOT office. I did bar work. And then I went into hairdressing. And that's where I just like, I fell in love with it straight away. And like everything I do now is part of like, I would like control shoots where I would direct like the makeup artist, the clothes designer, the photography of it, the editing of it, the hair, the makeup. So I kind of do everything that I kind of wanted to do. And that's where I love the industry, because it's so wide open and you're not just behind the chair all the time. You could choose just to be behind the chair, but I really felt like my career, I wanted to expand it and do so much with it. And I remember my career guidance teacher saying to me, oh, I went in with my portfolios and said, if I'm going to be a makeup artist, this is my portfolio. If I'm going to be a fashion designer, this is my portfolio. And she was just kind of looking at me going, you don't really know what you want to do yet. So you need to pick the right work experiences to actually see what you want to do. I think I want to be a mechanic. Like, I really think I want to be a mechanic. And my first day out in the job, the lads in the shop were like, you go out there and change oil underneath this car, you just hold this drum underneath it. And I opened it, I had brand new pair of overalls on, and I opened the thing, and I got soaked in oil, and I was like, I'm not doing this for a living. So that was kind of an eye-opener.
I went, we were doing work experience in an engineering firm, and the guy said, I want you to bilge pump out all the oil out of that. And 3 hours later, we smell of oil and hand pumping and pulling it around. And I went, that's not for me, not for me, you know. Yeah. So you did have a plan, because you had portfolios, so you knew what
I did. At the time then, my career guidance teacher was saying, like, you know, would you not try leisure and recreation? And I was like, what's that? And she was saying, like, you know, like a fitness instructor or something like that. And I was like, no, I won't get out of bed in the morning. way. So I kind of, I was very disappointed really in the advice that was out there. There was nowhere really to go, like for like even like for an apprenticeship, or it was hard enough to get into salons. You could get in as a Saturday girl, but that was it. You kind of, there was nowhere there to train, or nobody there to teach you or guide you or anything. And I remember I went to London. I was born in London, and I have a lot of family over there, so I'd go over and back quite a lot. So I went over to my cousin and she says, come on down, I'll bring you down into the West End and we'll go into Sassoon's and we'll see what's over there like. She says, because if you want to be a hairdresser, she goes, I know you'll want to be at the top of your game. You'll want everything. She says, this is what it is in London. It's Sassoon's. So I went in and I remember, like, I just loved the environment. I loved the style, the fashion. And I was a really Camden girl now. I was really goth back in the day. And I remember going in and I met, I think it was the receptionist, and she said, you know, there's an 8-month waiting list to get in here. And I just thought, I was so disheartened. I was like, oh, where am I ever going to find somewhere where I can actually break into and actually start like a good career? So I came back to Ireland and I had my hair cut in a blunt bob with a fringe and went into a few salons, dropped off my CV, and I still had done work experience through school and that. And I went into a salon, somebody had advised me to go in and meet with this girl. So I actually went in and I booked an appointment with her to get do my hair. And I said to her, now I've been over in Sassoon's, I said, and I've had my hair cut in Vidal Sassoon's. I said, I actually have a CV here and I'm looking for somebody to train me, and somebody has given me your name. I said, rather than having an interview with you, I said, I'd come in, see how you are cutting my hair. This is the salon owner, like. So she was like, I've actually trained in Sassoon's. So I was like, yeah, I know that. I said, but I want to see what you can do. So this is how the interview went. So she said, I tell you what, she says, come back, leave your CV there and come back to me after school one of the days and dress in black. Come in and see how you fit in with the team. Well, so I came back in anyway.
I'd say you had a good bit of black.
A lot of black. So I went in and I loved it. I loved everything about it. I loved the atmosphere. I loved the clients. I loved the girl even who, her name is Liz Greer, and she's been one of my mentors like since day one. Like, and I said, she said, what do you really want out of hairdressing? And I said, well, what I want is I want to own my own salon and run my own salon one day. And I want you to teach me how to do that. And she says, well, I can teach you how to do that.
How old were you then?
15.
That career guidance teacher really got it wrong. Like, you didn't know what you're doing. You're
doing. I go back and I give talks now to the career in the career guidance teacher at school. Like, it is funny when I tell my story, like, because she, I suppose she could see that I wanted to do so many things. I just didn't know where my focus was at the time. So this girl took me under her wing, Liz Greer, and she, like I said, I need to know everything. So I need you to take me through everything to do with colouring, everything to do with cutting. I want to know everything about every product. I want to know everything about running a business. And she said, I will only be able to take you so far. And she says, and then I will let you go and you'll move on and you'll build your career like that. At the time I was like, Jesus, she's going to get rid of me as soon as she's finished with me. But we actually worked together for a couple of years and then she left the salon business to have a baby. So in turn, I left as well because I wasn't getting the training there. And I went off barbering for a year, which was, it was good, but it wasn't exciting like it is now. And then about a year later, she said, I'm actually opening my own business. Do you want to come and work with me? So it was kind of from then that I went in. She took me under her wing, showed me all the ropes and really helped me and trained me really, really well. And then it was time for me to go. She said, I've done what I can do with you. And at the time then, when I was barbering, I was actually barbering for Sean Costello. Wow. And he had said when I left the barbering, I said, look, I want to go back and finish my hairdressing. And I really feel that that's where I always wanted to be. And he says, and I said to him, you know, if you ever come to Ennis, look me up for a job. So he did about around the same kind of time. It was like that transition from going from being the stylist to moving into like a senior stylist role. So I stayed there for about 5 years. And that's when I got kind of introduced to the competition circle and kind of met Maeve O'Healy Hart, and she kind of took me under her wing from there, kind of competition wise. And then I decided I had kind of got to the stage of being a senior stylist. I was very busy, had built a very loyal clientele, and I think it was time for me then to kind of
think. That was working with Sean Costlow then?
Yeah, I was working with Sean, yeah, and Liz Hartigan.
Question, because I know where you're heading now. The second question now is, why did you want to become a salon owner? And I think just listening to you here, we nearly see the journey you're on, you know?
Yeah, so I decided then I kind of built up, I was teaching a lot in the salon. I was kind of leading the wedding parties. I was doing an awful lot. And I said, you know, I kind of wanted to steer away from just being the senior stylist, being the busiest person. I was full, like I needed to move out and branch out and do a little bit more for myself. And at the time it was 2009. So of course it was July and it was just about everything. Like my dad had a very successful business. My two brothers were employed with him. My mom was at home running the farm. And the whole shift came where the recession had come in, and literally they were all in unemployed. And next thing, myself and my mother were like, okay, well, we now have to either sink or swim. And I had been in New York as well, traveling kind of in the June, and I'd seen a lot of salons over there. And I said, you know, it's not right at the time for me to open a massive salon, because that's what I'm always like, oh, I'm bigger, I'm better, but I have to kind of scale that back. And I have people in my life that do that for me. But I'd been in New York and I'd seen a lot of suites and very nice, intimate places. So I looked for something like that rather than opening a massive salon. And we were in the middle of a recession. People were reining everything back in. So I actually found a studio with a photographer I had been working with. And I set up a two-seater salon with a little wash basin in it. Then it progressed after about 3 months. I was gone to 4 seats, then 6, then 8. I had taken on staff. I just snowballed kind of from there. I started competing more with Team Ireland, and I won the Welle Trend Vision. And I was also, so I went down to Paris then to represent Ireland. And the same weekend, I actually competed on Team Ireland as well as the World Welle Trend Vision. So it was kind of a bit of a whirlwind, and I felt like I was doing an awful lot. And I kind of wanted to rein it back in and see where I was going. So in 2013, then I suppose I said, yeah, I'm ready now. I've built the team. The place where I was too small. So I needed to kind of say, right, you're either going to go bigger, and the economy was picking up as well. I said, now I'm ready to open a bigger salon. That's when Alpha Parf were approaching me for a couple of years as well, and kind of took me over from Welle. So that's where I kind of ended up then with a 14-seater salon in the middle of the town, and started building a team and a culture. And what was really my plan was I wanted to build a team from the ground up. And have them trained with our culture, with our kind of way of education. And that's something that I really believed in, especially even from a young age. It was always like, I want people to be educated. I want them to know everything and make their own decisions. And I remember speaking with a girl and she said, Bridget, why do you train people? Like what? Like they only leave. And I said, but what's worse? I said, I don't train them this day. That automatically sends a shockwave through my business, all through the rest of them. I said, it's the unmotivated person that will kill your team first. And she was like, oh, I never thought of it that way. I went back to remodel their business on it, on education and just kind of building up your team from the ground up.
I have an interesting question, because it's actually just dawned to me now, and I've been thinking back. I think you're the first person I've interviewed at the 7 of 7 that the salon is named after themselves.
It wasn't always. Yeah. In the beginning it was, when I started out, it was Bridget Hearn Hair, because it was just myself. And then in 2013, that was my fear, was that, oh, everybody's going to want me in the salon. And I was kind of given kind of maybe wrong advice. And when there was so much going on, like, you know, like fitting out a salon and building the team even bigger, like, there were so many different strings. I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I changed the name to Altimoda Hair.
Yeah.
Which was probably a wrong decision. And it took me probably about 2 years before I was able to change it back to Bridget Heron Hair and Beauty, because we expanded into beauticians and nails. And of course, I had set up a lot of training myself, so I had in the academy as well, where I was traveling out a lot. So yeah, it was a mistake to change the name 100%. And when some people ring up now and they're like calling it Altamoda, I'm like, really annoys me, but yeah. I've got over it, it's back. Yeah. The name is still there, like, and we've kind of branched out as well into a lot of merchandise, like we do our own kind of scents. The wax melts that are out, we've got our own kind of masks, bags. You know, we've really kind of started with brushes on the way as well. So like the merchandising and the brand is starting to grow, and that's something I've been kind of concentrating on for the last couple of years.
So if I was to go back now, you probably nearly answered that. If I was to say to you, go back to when you first opened, is there anything you would do differently? And obviously the name is one.
Lots. I suppose when I was training, a lot of my friends were in college, and I didn't really see the point of me going to college, because I kind of had a clear set. I wanted to train as a hairdresser and get qualified. So that was my college to me. But when I look back on it, even from now, like, I wish I'd done a business course. I wish that I had listened a little bit more and then not listened to people. because sometimes
listen to the right people.
Yeah.
That's where, and I think we only get that through experience.
Yeah.
I really think so, you know.
And to reach out a little bit more as well. Sometimes I find a salon owners, that's what kills a lot of them, is that they don't actually reach out to people, that there is somebody always there. Like we actually had a salon owners group as well. We used to call ourselves the SOG group. And it was myself, Sean, Wayne and Valerie. And we used to meet and we go through our figures and our average bill. And we do a lot of business courses together, like with Alan Austin Smith, Peter Lunn. Like even since then, I've done like the Barnetts. And at the moment I'm doing Anthony Whittaker. So I love like the idea of having the coaches and the people to mentor you, like on the business side of it. But I realized as well, like, you know, your accountant is very important. I have a really good girl, actually, Marie as well. So she does like all my books and tightens the purse strings. And she's actually Rossa Danaher's aunt.
Oh,
so he's always trying to steal her off me.
Yeah, well, I ended up, my accountant was a client of mine before she became my accountant. And then I remember at the time, I think I'd read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, the book. And one of the key bits I got out of that book was when he was talking about the right accountant, having the right accountant. But if your business isn't like a 2 million business, it doesn't need a 2 million accountant. It needs an accountant that knows how to look after a 500,000 business. So don't always be going, keep it, because your budget as well. Like you can end up having an accountant that you're kind of going, I'm paying top price for this again, but I don't need them. I just need somebody good to balance the books. And I remember saying that to Susan, I have a great accountant, but I look at his bills and I kind of go, he's always telling me how to reduce your color percentage, but he's never told me once how to reduce his bill. And she says, well, actually, Greg, I know you and I so well, and I think you used to do a lot of this work handy yourself. And that's when we start changing, and Alison became the payroll person, and then I became the receipts and invoices and that side of it. And we've always done, and we basically just pay the account through the year end, you know. And it's, and the one thing I would say about doing that is you really get to understand your business, which is a lot of what Alan Austin Smith points out to us along the way. And I'm sure Peter Nunn, and I'm sure Anthony Whittaker, if you don't know the numbers, there's no point. And now that you've branched into, I've seen that with the melts and the scents and the your own brushes, all that stuff all adds up a lot. And the only way you can make money is to buy that in volume. So you have to have homework done. And I'm sure you're a bright enough person now that you are, because I can tell that's just what I'm talking to you, you know? So lots of mistakes that you would have made in the beginning. I'm sure what I'm hoping is that by doing these interviews, you get to pass on that others won't make that mistake. Because
I did a lot of work as well with our local enterprise office in the last couple of years. And I do a lot of work for them now. And really, like, I would have loved if somebody had been able to share that with me way back when, like, at the beginning, like I opened my salon with my SSAI money. And like, I don't know if anybody remembers that, but like I was taught how to save, because before I actually went from, let's say my own, let's say from working in a salon to working by myself, I actually traveled around the world as well. And I did like Thailand, Australia, New Zealand. And like banks were handing out credit cards. And I thought like the credit card thing, like, you know, the limit was like a target.
Yeah.
And it kept going up and up and up. So when I came home from Australia, my mother was like, Bridget, you've 10 grand to pay off there. How are you going to do it? And like, she was the one who kind of taught me how to save. And I did a lot of work with Alan Austin Smith, and he was always like going on about, you know, like save 10% of your tips, save 10% of your wages. And like the SSAI was what I was actually doing. And I continue to do that. Even to this day, I still do that. And like by the time I was 34, I was mortgage free, no car loan, anything. So that was something that I had set as a target as well, for myself, like that I wanted to be financially secure. And by the time I would like start my own family, or, you know, that I would actually have like a sustainable business, but have like my own independence and my own house. So like that was something that I had like as a target as well in my mind. And it would have been from, let's say, Alan Austin Smith and my mother hounding me every week for money, you know, that really kind of helped me focus to get those things as well.
Yeah, and I think it's like, I can't drill that enough into our younger people at the time. You know what I mean? I brought a pensions guy in to talk to him about taking a pension out, whether they did or not, but I just felt obliged that they needed to understand, because I took my pension out when I was 24. And somebody said, God, you remember the financial guy I have now? I said, I'd love to say I was very bright, but I wasn't. I just had a friend who worked for an insurance company and said, you've no security in that job, you should take out a pension. And I went, oh, should I? So had he not have said it, I probably wouldn't have. But I definitely feel, you know, you need to always be planning ahead. If you don't have a plan, forget about it. So leading into the next question is, what makes an amazing salon?
So our kind of culture is all about education, and it's all about, well, we would have loved the client experience, but I feel like we've kind of had that ripped away from us at the moment. I think once I'm able to deliver to the team, you know, what our culture is, and how we need to develop that, and how we always need to be constantly upskilling. We always need to be you have to teach everybody to run their column like it's their own business. Mm-hmm. And their wage expectation can be anything, because it's up to them. It's not up to the salon to pay your wage. It's actually up to you. So that's something that we're really trying to install in our team we have now. And we have apprentices coming up as well. And when the time is right, they get to go and do these courses as well. But they see everybody else in the salon doing it, so they're like, I want a bit of that.
Yeah.
That's really kind of like, for me, like it's the team culture. It's the team morale. Like I even remember it when I was in my salon years ago, like if there was a prize for selling the most shampoo, I would win it. Even if it was like the prize is a pen, I was like, I'm winning that pen. And even if you're on competition with yourself, like, you know, that's what I like about like the teamwork. Clients love to see teamwork as well. And in our salon, we have an open door policy where we can go to each other. We can go over to the clients together if we want to solve like a color query, or we want to do a duo consultation. And the clients love that, because we're always like, what do you think of this? And, you know, it's really open and honest. Like, and if I don't know something, I have no problem bringing somebody else over going, can you help me here? And that's kind of like, a lot of salons mightn't have that support. And a lot of people that have worked with us as well have said that they didn't feel that they've had that kind of support in like maybe their last salon. And for me, it's all about the teamwork and how you drill the team round, and everybody like knows that they all contribute to something, to an end goal. The clients love it as well. Like we do, like we've done like our treatment menus, we've done our refreshment menus. And these are things that are kind of taken away. And I actually quite like at the moment that we don't have all the other fluff, and you're literally there with your client, and the team have said this as well, like they love the fact that it's all now about you and the client, and you can really like get the service and take the service even to a higher standard without having fluff added onto it. And yes, people love the fluff, but you have to bring it back down to hairdressing as well. Like, you know, you want to give somebody the time that they deserve, and you, the fluff will all come back in again. I know that. But yeah. I really think it's nice.
I hated magazines lying around the salon.
Yeah, me too.
And, you know, as much as you try and make them look well, you know, you'd find clients that put them, throw them, and next minute four of them are on the floor. And now we don't have that. And I find that I like the clean lines now that in the salon. But the reality is it'll probably come back to how it was. One of the things I would feel, and you might agree with me on this, is that the team now and the stylists are appreciating their worth a bit more. And they're liking, let's slow it down here and let's.
Yes.
Do you feel that the guest will appreciate that enough to see us charge what we actually should be charging?
Well, I would feel we're probably, in Ennis, we would be probably one of the more expensive salons. But when I actually market around, we're probably not. But the expectation out there probably is that we are. And what I like is when they come in, they see the effort that we've put in. Like we've got screens. I don't know if you can see my screens either side, but it actually makes it a little bit more personal. So they've worked in our advantage, the screens, to us. It makes the guest kind of feel a little bit more important, that this is their own cubicle. And it kind of brings me back to when I first opened the salon and it was very small, and the guest was just me and them. So they're kind of feeling like that again, regardless of the cappuccinos and the Prosecco and the magazines and everything. And I would always have been, I wanted the best magazines. I wanted the best Prosecco. I wanted, you know, it was always like, you know, give them everything, but be able to deliver a really good service as well. And when we were on our salon owners group, that was something that we had set out to do, was to create like an industry standard. And we used to all like train each other's team. So if somebody was good at cutting, we would train all the stylists first, and then we'd train all the junior members then, and then it was same for upstyling. So we would swap trainers within the salons, and that was something that it really brought up the level of the stylists and the apprentices in the salon. And it was really, it was a nice kind of industry standard to look forward to as well.
I think you can get a hell of a lot of when you band together and join together and forces, because you can't be all things to all men or women. So if you can, if somebody else has that, you're better off bringing them in, you know what I mean? And that's why I always say to their team, look, you'll stay working with me as long as I can deliver what your expectations are, but someday, like your mentor said to you, you will outgrow. And I always say I'll be the first person to pat you on the back, you know what I mean? It's like doing Des and Tanya there recently, where you look at Des taking over, or Des retiring and Tanya taking over the business. That's something that I think we'd all love, is that if that day came, that you're handing it to somebody who knows the business, who can look after it and take it on the next stage of that journey. You know what I mean? So, but they might, you'll have to make sure that they keep Bridget Harr in the name. And they probably will, because there'll be so much branded stuff out there that nobody will want to lose the brand.
Depends how much it's worth at that stage.
Hopefully it's global. That's what I'd like to see. You know what I mean? And it doesn't mean global amount of salons. It's just the name carries so well, because I've seen some amazing brand salons and they're just one salon. You know what I mean? And it's just you look and it's their culture, it's their whole image, you know? And I don't think all of us aren't many. Like I had a second salon, gave it a go, and then the recession came and I decided, you know what? No, I'm the man that's better off at one salon and lots of other little things to do, you know?
But that's our in-house. We as I said, I have people in place. Like I have a manager in place. I have my purse strings. Like, if she wants me to spend anything, she'll say I will go away and I will figure out whether it's going to be financially possible for you to do this. This is before I'd even go to a bank or anything. And like at one stage, like banks were throwing money at people and it was wrong, you know. So sometimes when you have that sound advice where somebody can say, well, this isn't going to work, you're going to have to think of something else. And rein you back in a little bit and kind of make you realize that, you know, to put something and put everything into what you want, you know, you have to give it everything. But at the same time, it has to be financially, you know, worthwhile as well.
Yeah, I think we learned that as time was on, is that as much as we love what we do, at the end of the day, bills have to be paid.
Yeah.
And you have to pay that mortgage or not, or clear it, which is a fantastic story, because I think any young person that has that drive to clear their mortgage off, because I still have a mortgage, you know what I mean? But then that was to do with the money that the banks threw us in 2008, you know what I mean? But when I look at young people borrowing now, I kind of go, Jesus, the little bit of mortgage I have is nothing compared to what
people
are borrowing now, you know? So we're on to mentors, and you tip the iceberg a little bit of one. So you've had several, I'd imagine, in your career, and not all hairdressing. So I'd love to hear who are your mentors for Bridget.
I have lots of mentors. Liz Greer would have been my hairdressing mentor from the beginning, who kind of started me up. Like, she would have taught me things like, you know, attract the client that you want as well. As I said, I used to be a goth, so I used to have put baby powder and everything on my face, and like, I have green eyes, but I used to put green contacts in, and I kind of looked like a cat at one stage. And I remember walking, like, she used to say to me, you know, you have to dress for the clientele you want. And I didn't get that. I was like, no, I want to be individual and I want to do this and that. And I remember walking uptown one day, and there was a little boy walking in front with his mother, and I was coming behind him. I had a long matrix jacket on, and I had my hair and these kind of dreads and the white makeup, the black lips, and I was walking behind him. Next thing he started looking, and he was like, mommy, mommy. And the next thing he started screaming. And I realized he was screaming at me. And I remember going back to her, and I went back into the salon. I said, yeah, I think I need to change my image. And she's like, really? And I was like, yeah, cut my hair back into the bob, will you? And I remember going down to Dunn's and buying like a suit jacket and wearing like a nice black pants. And slowly but surely my clientele changed, and it became a lot more professional. They became, you know, the clients that like looking after their hair, they like looking after themselves. And that's really where I started to realize you attract what you want.
Yeah.
And like, really, that's where kind of the penny dropped for me. So she would have been a very good influence in how to lead me into that without, I did take a little boy to scream for me to realize that. In competition work then, Maeve Healy Hart was really the person who guided me on that. And she introduced me to Team Ireland. She really helped me, and still is helping me and guiding me today. Like, she'd often say, no, don't put that in. She was simple as that. Or if I didn't win something, I'd ask her, and she said, go ask the judge. And I'd go ask the judge, like, you know, what could I do better? She was nice about it, like, in a way that Maeve would kind of be a little bit, you'd think she's a bit standoffish. She actually does deliver to you without hurting your feelings or anything. She would deliver, like, you know, go ask the judge what they think. And then when I come back and I'll tell her all about it, and then she'll say, yeah, maybe you need to kind of do this the next time, or, you know, don't put that kind of lipstick on your model, your outfit needs to change. So she really helped and guided me on, you know, where I needed to go in the competition circle. And then she introduced me to people like Wayne Lloyd. And like, Wayne was a huge inspiration to me, because like, he kind of started out, he hadn't a clue about competition work either. He was entering competitions as well, and he wasn't winning. And she said, you need to surround yourself with the competition winners. And I started watching like Anthony Kilcoyne, Martha Galvin. And it was only then when I started seeing the people that were winning, like Anthony in Salon 2, and David Murray, and just watching, like going to all the competitions and actually seeing and not entering, but watching. And one of the things I really like to do now is I like to go to the competitions, and I can watch, like I can tell you first, second, third.
Yeah.
And we'd always have little bets on, and, you know, make it a bit of fun. But I can really see like what it takes to actually become the winner. And like, I entered Trend Vision 3 times before I won it. And where I actually ended up winning was in 2010. From 2009 to 2011, I went back to Sassoon's in London, and I said to them, you know, I'm competing, I'm doing okay, but I'm not first. And it was over there I got talking to and working with like Mark and Bruce and Edward and God rest Peter, Dawson, like he was amazing, a colorist as well. And they kind of helped me kind of see what competing really was and like how you have to get your idea across to sell it to the judge. And their philosophy was like, if you weren't in the morning at 7 o'clock for breakfast, you missed about what the whole day was going to be about. And that's the same, like even now when I'm competing, like we would have mood boards and we would have discussions, and even like picking the model, we'd have everything like fine tuned and we would know exactly the story, even if it was just even the photo shoot. But like we'd be able to deliver to the photographer exactly what we want the image to look like and the mood, the feel of it. The makeup artist, like one of my main things I say to makeup artists to not throw them off track is I want to see the model's natural beauty, bring out her natural beauty, whether it be her lips or her eyes. So that really, like that's what they kind of taught me. Mm. Alan Austin Smith, I suppose then business wise, he was kind of the one that kind of taught me about saving and, I know, heard you talking to Anthony about the one piece of paper that I still can't get my head around. Like I really enjoy Alan's courses. I love going to them. In our salon as well, we have two different ways of looking at being a stylist growing up through our salon. So we have the side of it that is the 50-50%. So 50% is skill, 50% is personal development. And this is when I was doing his courses that I realized it is the 50-50. And we offer that in our salon, which makes us a lot different to a lot of other salons. Like we will teach you about your saving, your spending. We will teach you about like running the business, the column like your business. We will teach you the skill assets for it. And we're still doing that even to this day. Like we've taken on Anthony Whittaker at the moment and he's doing Super Stylist with us. I don't know if you've heard of that program, but it's all about building you up to be the super stylist. So I love like kind of mentors like that teaching me the business side of things. And then I suppose my mom and my dad were really a big influence. Like my mother, Jesus, she used to kill me like with...
They're mortgage free, thanks.
Morgan, yeah, and savings and stuff. Like even like I used to, like when I got my first car, I was like, I don't want a banger, mom. I want a brand new car. And I crashed on the fourth day of having that car. I crashed the car. I've never told her, like somebody banged into me, like. But I remember her saying, like, you know, you owe for that car. You know, you have to actually pay for that car. You owe that money back. And I remember like, you know, having to make sure that I was able to have enough money in my bank account to be able to pay for the car and go out the weekend and travel off to London, do all my courses and, you know, pay for your accommodation, your flights and everything. So she was a big influence in that. And my dad was a really hard worker. And even when we were opening back here, like, or anytime I've like relaunched the salon or rebuilt it, like they've been there. My dad has been in here. He was a carpenter and he'd like, build it all up for me. My mother would be painting it. So they've really been a huge influence on me, like, you know, and helped me an awful lot as well, like in my journey. So they were kind of, you know, the ones, they're still behind me even today, like, you know, the
maybe the work ethic that still stands to you to this
day. No, definitely, yeah. I would get my work ethic definitely from them, yeah.
Yeah. So last year was probably one of the strangest years we've ever been in business, in life. Mm. Well, I'm probably going to be known as the glass half full person, and I'll have to live my life like that forevermore because I'm always saying it. So you have to find the glass half full moments. So what ones could you find in the last year that you've said, do you know what, I might be at work, but, or when I get back to work, I'm definitely going to do this. So
So I suppose I have two kind of sides to this, and one of them being the apprenticeship. So I have four girls now on the apprenticeship. But it was the only apprenticeship in the country that continued. So they worked away on their theory, the girls, and they're absolutely like amazing young girls. And they continued to work, and their teacher in the ETB, the Clare and Limerick ETB, her name is Claire, she was phenomenal with them. Like, she kept up the study with them. And then the girls in the salon, their mentors, Joe, kept the lines of communication open with them and continued to mentor them. So when we came back to work, they had jobs because they were ready to go on the floor. So that, for me, it really opened my eyes to, like, the online stuff, the education that was out there. So as stylists as well, we were able to access online education that what maybe wasn't free to us before, but was then. So everybody was still educating themselves, even though the salon was closed. And that was something that I thought, wow, this is going to really go far, and it's going to be huge. From the other side of it then, from the business side, we had set up online consultations. And this is something that has proved huge for our salon, because it kept the line of communication open from the salon and to the clients. Not only like selling the products or anything, but like sometimes people just wanted to talk, you know, and I could talk all day.
I remember saying that to one of our receptionists, and she says, I said, will we start? And she goes, seriously? She said, some of their top stylist clients will never let you off the phone because they actually look at, not so much the stylist, the front of the house is like their buddy. You know, they organize their appointments, organize their products, organize everything, gets their coat. And they want to, and I think they miss that as much as getting their hair done. You know what I mean? And she's, Lana goes, geez, Dad, I'd be there all day. You know, and I'm kind of going, well, it might be something, but it is something we have to look at for the future.
Yeah.
Interesting question as regards to training the apprentices. Okay. And it's just one of my fears with so much online training that, and I feel now, and I've said it to my wife Alison, the next time you do an online education, I think you should get the mannequin out and actually go through it while the person's doing it, because that's how we learn. That's how we, so drilling it into the academically all the time does not reinforce the myelin in your brain to create the pathways to make you better at doing it. So all of a sudden they come in, they've got this knowledge, and then they kind of go, how did I do that again? Whereas, you know yourself, you know how to cut a line. You cut so many of them so many times now that you probably could hold a full conversation, drink a coffee, and still cut a perfect line. You know what I mean? And so would you agree with me on that, that we need to look at that part of it a bit more?
Well, definitely, because, like, as I said, I don't want somebody who's able to talk hairdressing but can't actually do it.
Yeah.
So I know that that line has been, like, the last thing we want is for them to go in and be half hairdressers. So that's where we would have our mentors in place, and there's extra training being put on for them. There's extra courses being put online from, like, even things like motivational speakers, or even like things like this, you know, where they go on, they listen to somebody's story, you know, just things to keep them motivated as well. But remember as well, like, I had the girls with me before we actually put them on the apprenticeship, so they would already been doing hairdressing. And it's really like their mentors as well are there to help them, and they'll like, the girls are fantastic, you know, they'll really help, you know, push them along. And once they get into the practical side of things, it just rolls for them as well. Like, and the fact that they have the theory behind them is really good as well, because a lot of us hairdressers, we didn't have that theory when we were, you know, so the fact they're really strong now coming up against us, you know, we might have the practical, we might have the gift of the gab, but at the same time, they have a lot of knowledge and they're building that up, whereas we mightn't have had a lot of that knowledge when we were training. Which leads me into kind of the RPL as well. Like, this is a time where I think hairdressers can really kind of take a seat back and kind of say, right, I need to go back and look at what I have done in the last 10, 15, 25 years even, and start building a portfolio and getting ready for what's coming down along the line. Don't be just waiting for things. Just start the ball rolling. Like, so, like, every salon owner out there now could start saying, guys, start collecting all your stuff for the RPL. It's coming down the line. You know, it's going to be here before we actually know it. It's probably going to have a window where it's going to be open and then it's going to be shut again. So you need to kind of make sure that you're ready for it. And I think the clients as well, like, look at hairdressing. It's now, it's back in the forefront of everybody's minds. Like, everybody wants the hair salons open. Like, there wasn't a person in the country that wasn't screaming about it. It made our industry open up again. Like, even the apprenticeship, like, loads of people went for the apprenticeship this time, Joe, compared to 2 years ago, because we were everywhere. We were on every news station. We were on every program, and people wanted hairdressers. It made our industry kind of sexy and adventurous, and you know, everybody wanted to be like, look at the hairdressers. Everybody wants to be in their career. People were leaving like other jobs, other careers to go into hairdressing. And that really kind of like, I was like, maybe like the people who went to college and, you know, did all their fancy courses and everything, you know, where are they? They now want to go back into something like the apprenticeship and, or, you know, into salons where it is exciting and it's a great opportunity and everybody wants it. And we are going to be here for a long time.
That's brilliant. I love hearing that, you know what I mean? Because I do, you do at times worry about the future, but now I think we have to look at COVID and say, well, what was the positive? And maybe it will drive more people back towards the industry. Even me, right into the tarnished, I don't think I ever would years ago. But now I think we have politicians that, yeah, they will listen. And they will, but you need to do it. You know what I mean? And that's why obviously too many people thought, well, or they think a rant on Facebook or Instagram is enough. And it isn't, you know? And you know that because you've been part of the Hair Council, been, you know, actively there campaigning for the industry. And I think I'm delighted that you're one of the first people to have apprentices on the official apprenticeship, because I know you fought hard to get it. You know, I can't wait to get one on. It's just that mine were too far down the road to get them in. But I know the next batch will be there, because I joined the IHF Executive Committee when I joined 20 odd years ago. And my aim was to help get an apprenticeship for hairdressing.
Yeah. So I would have been started.
Dave about that and thinking, this is really exciting. And I remember the saddest thing was when I left the IHF, you know, after 20 years, it was that we still don't have one. But what's coming, we don't have one, but now we do. So let's all embrace it. So the last thing I want to ask you now is on your seventh is, what would you like the future to hold if you had a crystal ball for the next 12 months of your business? What's on the agenda?
For my own business or for what I'm doing in general or...
Oh, whatever.
Whatever, okay. I suppose I'd like to see the apprenticeship really push forward, and I'd like to see the RPL off the ground and people really stand.
The RPL is, because a lot of people probably won't know.
So it's recognised prior learning. So it would be, there's two different kind of ways you can kind of go for it. So it's all to do with any experience you have, you can go forward to a panel, and it's not fully finished yet. So I don't want to say anything and then it'd be wrong. But we're working very hard on it, trying to get it across the line. So you can go, you can get your piece of paper that says you're a qualified hairdresser. So you can, it's a level 6, so it comes in at the same as the apprenticeship, and you can be as qualified as electrician. That's what your piece of paper would say at the end of it.
Best place for people to go to find out more about it.
So for the apprenticeship, you can register your interest at hairdressingapprenticeship.ie. And the RPL, as I said, it'd be through them as well, but it's coming in down along the line. We're just fine tuning it. From my own perspective then, for the salon, we're growing our team again from the ground up. We have loads of good girls in the salon. The team is amazing. They all love education, and I kind of want to continue to build that. And what a lot of salon owners out there don't realize is that, like, we pay like 1% of a levy, training levy, to the National Training Fund. And a lot of people don't realize that. And I've since joined Skillnet, and what they do is they fund a lot of courses. And we've availed of it. Like, we've had the Barnetts flown in. We've had Ben Brown. We've had loads of, like, Gemma Cross has come down doing upstyling with us, and we will avail of the training fund through that. So I really want to get on board, like, with that. I'm on the committee now for them. So I want to kind of push that out and help salon owners realize what it is and realize they do pay something to the government, and that they should be kind of trying to get some of it back as well. Like, and, you know, a lot of people out there, they don't realize that. You know, they feel like, you know, they don't want to be taking anything from anybody that they're not entitled to, but in fact you are actually getting a levy on it. So that's something I really
you take everything that's been given.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you have to know what's out there first though. And then from the salon point of view, like, growing the team up, is something that's going to take a few years, and like I'm willing to put the investment into it. Growing our online as well, like I have a digital marketing girl on board as well, so she really helps me as well. Like the management side of the business, I really want to grow that as well, and I have a really good team on board there, so I want to kind of develop that side of the business a little bit more. And like I love learning. Like I used to hate figures and numbers and things like that before, and I'm dyslexic, so it used to come to me very easy, but yet I'd remember anybody's color straight away, not even looking at their card. So I really want to kind of develop that side of me. Like I do things like payroll, which I never thought I would do before, but I learned it and I actually quite enjoy it. Don't like to see how much I have to pay though on top of it, but you know, it's a learning, like, and I want to kind of develop that side of the business a lot more, and then I want time as well for my family. You know, I didn't enjoy things like maternity leave because I felt very like closed off from the business, but I loved the first lockdown.
Yeah,
because
I think we all nice
weather and big time to spend
as well.
Yeah,
coming into summer. Yeah,
and I'm spending a lot of time now out on the farm with my little boy, and kind of loving that. I do a lot of Snapchat videos with cows and different things like that. So I'm kind of re-entering into a phase of my life where I want to kind of spend a bit time with my family, and I want to be able to have a successful business. But it is, you have to put all the pillars in place to be able to do that. And it's really like trying to grow that side of it.
I think you're a passionate hairdresser, so you'll always like to have time to cut hair and do hair.
Yeah,
I think you know what I mean. Like there was a stage in my career where I thought I could live without cutting hair now. If I just had other people and I'll do the other stuff. But the lockdowns, I actually miss cutting hair.
Yeah,
an 88-year-old dad and an 86-year-old mom, and I get excited to do their hair in the house because they don't realize that they've got dementia. They're going, why aren't you doing it at work? Why aren't you? Go, you don't know how lucky you are to have a hairdresser come in and do your hair. And they're going, why? Why aren't you working? I go, no, just let me enjoy doing it. You know, so we actually do miss it. You know what I mean? Like, and I wouldn't, like, you're a natural gifted. Well, no, I changed all that because I've read a book recently that said, you should never say to people you're a naturally gifted person, because that's an insult to the hard work they've had to do to get there. So basically what I think is you're a hard working person that when you get a passion for something, you really knuckle down.
Thank you.
And the industry's lucky to have you. You know what I mean? Because I know going forward, it's people like yourself that will keep the industry alive and will keep the passion there and open the doors for many people to come. So that's your 7 at 7 done, Bridget.
Wow.
Well, I really feel I've got to know you now, because we've brush shoulders at times and at different events. And that one part of this as well is the one of the reason I set it up is that you missed the networking of going to events. You know what I mean? As I said to Ross,
yeah, absolutely.
Geez, Ross, I got more. I everything I know about you, and I done at a, it was at a bar, you know, like having a beer. That was everything I knew. It was that I generally met him at an event with the hairdressers, and now we don't. And this gives a great opportunity for people who are new to salon ownership or struggling, an opportunity to really understand Bridget is a little bit like me, like the honesty of the dyslexia. It's like me with color blindness and the staff going, how did you ever come forward in the L'Oreal color throw? And I said, because I learned to color by numbers. I wasn't bad with numbers, so I understood that, but I wasn't that bad that I couldn't tell the difference between red and, you know what I mean, I could get there. But it was when we changed to Wella and it was green based, that's when I was found out. So I was terrified, because not that I ever left Wella because I didn't like Wella. It's just I felt more comfortable and the team were happy to move. And I think it's like yourself, the team is everything, isn't it?
But yeah, absolutely.
Realize, if you're being led by the wrong leader, then the team isn't going to be as successful. So I think it's a combination of leadership and team, and you have it all there at Bridget Aaron. So listen, if you want to say goodbye to everybody in the world, it's Soul Brothers and Sisters.
Yeah, I do. And as I said at the beginning, you know, if anyone wants to reach out and have a chat or anything, like I'm always at the end of the phone or at the end of Facebook or one of those. You know, it really is about reaching out. And that's where I have found over the years, like, that people have been so good to me and take me under their wing and just like really helping me. And if you don't ask, you won't get either. Like, so like that's where our industry, like, it's absolutely, it's an amazing industry. And we need to remember that.
And so, I think after saying that, now you want to make sure you have big wings, lady. because you're going to have a lot of people wanting to get under your wings now. Listen, Bridget, thanks very much.
And thank you so much.
At the end of another hump of the week, 7 out of 7. And may the hair force be with you. So until again, take care. Bye.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you for listening and watching our interview with Bridget Harron of Bridget Harron Hair and Beauty. If you've enjoyed the interviews, please like, share and subscribe to our channels and our pages. We look forward to hearing from you and we look forward to you giving us a 5-star review. So keep the faith and see you all again soon. Take care.